better to do it before the game than complain after the game, right?
No, it was before the game.
Okay, Etienne had his phone to take a selfie. Like I took a selfie with Etienne before.
Okay, what happened to his phone? Like, what did he do? Which one do you think is more difficult to achieve? Magnus is 9 out of 9 in Grenke or in Classical, or 9 out of 9 in Croatia in Blitz? There were some rumors about a USA versus India match. Do you know anything? Can you give any details on that one? Boom. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Here with another episode of the C Squared podcast. It's been a couple of weeks since we last chatted in Paris. The last one was with Danny Wrench, and we had a nice ride from the tournament hall to the hotel. Good conversation. Some interesting thoughts by Danny, but of course you were in the middle of a tournament, which went somewhat decent, I would say, but still plenty of things happened since. Fabi, how's it going? Where are you? Good to see you.
Yeah, I'm in Spain.
Spain, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's going all right. You know, just resting a bit. It's the Grand Chess Tour is starting soon. Well, actually, did start already, but I'm not playing the first event, so I'm just taking a break before my first event. But they started today, so the Grand Chess Tour is going on. That's the big one. There's a lot of events, but that's the big one going on at the moment. Yeah, besides that, we were playing all the Fischer Random. That's, it's very weird now. It's like, I had like a month-long period. I played chess every day, pretty much, and I didn't look at any chess. I didn't work on chess.
You looked at every chess.
Yeah, there's nothing to work on. And you don't check out, like, what am I going to do? Check openings and then play Fischer Random in the meantime? I mean, so I basically took a month period where I just didn't check any openings.
It's interesting, right? It's a completely different world, chess world, than what we were used to. Not only that, you have like freestyle, which is starting to become a thing in the chess world, definitely something to stay and definitely something that top players are going to play for a while. But just the switch from one format to the other, now you add in freestyle chess. Like, what do you even focus on whenever you have some free time? Do you still work on chess? Do you still rest? Do you start looking at freestyle chess positions and try to acclimate yourself with those type of adventures? Like, what do you even do as a player nowadays?
Well, it's funny. Hikaru was at some point joking, or maybe he's serious, that obviously I had worked and analyzed a lot of Fischer Random positions, clearly, which I'd never done, of course. And the closest I've gotten to actually working on any Fischer Random chess or freestyle, I guess we can call freestyle for everyone to understand what we're talking about, is that I played blitz games and occasionally checked like the evaluation of the first move. And then not really committed it to memory very much, although on some rare instances, I have gotten positions that I've played in Blitz, so I've known kind of something about them, at least. I remembered some vague details. And usually that memory fades very quickly because there's too many positions, and we play a lot of different positions. A lot look very, very similar, very familiar, mm-hmm. but you could just mix up like one piece placement. So I've never done any systematic work on freestyle, that's for sure, because it's not really necessary. And because I think just by practicing a lot, by playing games, you get a decent feeling for what you're trying to achieve in the opening. So like, I tend to feel like I know what I'm doing, looking for, at least in the first few moves. And I'm not going to go and try to memorize hundreds of positions, which has very diminishing returns. And it's still just part of the type of chess I'm playing. And I feel like, okay, it's not super useful. Like, the games rarely come down to the opening stage as long as you play sensible moves, right? You can get a bad position, but not too bad if you play sensibly. And I think people tend to be a bit careless on those starting moves. That's why they sometimes go wrong. The people who have more experience, like Magnus, for example, like myself, tend to, as we saw in the Open tournament, tend to have a better feeling for like the starting moves.
Yeah.
And then it turns into a random mess very often. Anyway, this is the nature of chess, especially when you get low on time. But definitely, like, I haven't worked on freestyle. My work is the same usual work that I do, you know, when I have time to do it, which is mostly opening work and trying to
discover new things.
But that's opening work in classical chess, in normal chess, right? Now things are just simply changing. Like, for example, okay, you as an established player, I would say you already have somewhat of a routine. It's not going to get impacted too much. But let's say for a player that's like 2600, trying to go up through the ranks, trying to make it to the elite, what should that player focus on is the question. And I'm not even sure what the answer is to. I guess still just classical chess and trying to increase your rating and then play some Freestyle Fridays and try to qualify for the freestyle events. But as you just pointed out, and I think that's kind of an important thing to do, you guys have so much more experience right now. And this is something that Magnus was saying as well. Like the players that are playing regularly the freestyle events, he was saying that you guys got much better compared to the first time you played freestyle like a year ago. Just much better. You can assess the position much better. And this is kind of, I mean, we can go into the change of format that's going to come for the next event based on that. But this is something that he mentioned. You guys got much better. You have an advantage because you play it regularly. Like, what does the 2600, 2650 focus on right now? You know, rapid, classical, freestyle. Which one? Which one is
2600? I mean, you're only playing classical chess, really, for the most part. Like, assuming you're a professional 2600, which is a very tough spot to be in.
Mm.
But let's say you're trying to, maybe you're young and you're trying to improve. I mean, there's not really money at the 2600 level in chess in general. Unless you're willing to, you know, take your chances in the online scene and perhaps, you know, go above and beyond. And then you might have a very good career. But like for the most part, it's mostly classical chess if you're 2600. You know, the freestyle events are a few a year. There's one open event. It's probably very low equity in terms of what you're actually going to earn there. You know, it's the prizes were very good, but it's huge competition. And for example, my score was very reasonable, 7 out of 9. It was second place, shared 7 ways, using a very strange system to determine prizes called the Hort system, which splits part of the money evenly and in part based on Sonnenborn Berger. But in any case, like, it's not that much money. I mean, I had a performance that very few people would have a chance to make, and I got a good prize. But half a point less, which is still a good performance, got like $500. So that one event a year is obviously not, you know, that's not a money-making event for...
I think this is what Grigory was saying. He was playing Grishuk the last one, and whoever would have won that one would make like 15K, which is very decent. And with a draw, he made like nothing, basically.
Yeah, that's, I think, 6.5 out of 9, which is a perfectly good score. And a lot of players like Maxime, like Wesley, Levon, I'm not even sure if they made 6.5 out of 9, but they were under the 7-point score group, which was the last money-making score group.
Yeah.
And first place, obviously, was 9 out of 9, Magnus, which was, you know, happens once every few decades, I guess.
You think so? I mean, he only played one over 2,700.
No, I mean, okay, maybe I'm exaggerating a bit, but it's still 9 out of 9. It's not like he dropped half a point, you know. It's true that he played Vincent, he played Parham, who I would consider basically a 2700 player,
sure.
Even if he's maybe a bit below.
Yeah.
He did play some guys like Ralph. It's also clear at some point that people were getting very intimidated because, well, not Parham. I mean, Parham is doesn't seem to ever be intimidated, but you know, Parham tends to take the game into kind of crazy territory, so that's also a bit random. But I mean, he was playing great, but also people were getting scared, clearly. Like how a wonder loss to him, you know, was kind of felt like it the position was normal, and then suddenly from nowhere came this mistake. But still, it's a pretty historic result. I do think that in general, the tournament seriousness was diminished slightly because it wasn't rated. I think that when you have a big open tournament and you have a lot of people who aren't playing for money, maybe they have some hopes, but, you know, you drop like 1.5 points early on. Most of the people have done that at some early on in the tournament, and then they're not really playing for any money at all. And they're also not playing for rating. And they tend to, they'll still like play seriously, but they don't tend to care as much. So it like the stakes are not that high. For the top guys, yeah, the stakes were pretty high coming into end. Everyone was trying really hard, but you did see some like weird games. Like there was this game, Vincent against Sergey Movsesyan, where the game was over wide, lost in like 14 moves. I mean, there were people who like were losing in 10 moves. Very strong players, you know. Jan, for example, that's some of his games near the end when he was no longer fighting for much. He was routinely like getting lost position on like move 3 with either color. So it did feel like you need a rating system, something that people can play for even if they're out of the money.
Yeah.
That's like in classical chess, we value the rating so much that even a game where there's no money on the line, people will take very seriously because it really matters to them. Am I 2680 or 2675? Am I 2775 or 2770? Am I 2620? It all these points like matter very much. The difference between half a point in a game and 5 points will be very significant for people. It might be the difference between Olympiad qualification or not. It might be the difference between being number one in your country or not.
Yeah.
It might be the difference between making the Grand Chess Tour or not. So it's people take it very seriously. For the freestyle, until we have a coherent rating system, which maybe they'll implement at some point, it does like slightly change how the tournament progresses.
Yeah, no, for sure. For the moment, it feels like the whole concept of freestyle is being run like a startup. You basically just throw things at the wall and see what sticks and try to improve based on that. Try to improve based on the feedback that you get from the people and from the tournaments that you're running. And it seems like this is what they're doing. Like they're changing the format after one tournament. It's obviously not going to be a world championship worthy tour anytime soon. At least not until, as you just pointed out, you have a rating system, you have something that players in general fight for. It does seem for the moment it's just being run as a startup. And I kind of like it. I mean, look, it's something that, especially with the Open that you just mentioned, the Grand Prix Classic. First of all, I don't know if, I think this is only one. Yeah, one per year. I don't think there's...
As far as I know, for the moment, it's just one.
Just
because
one
they also... event. It was a joint venture. And although Freestyle put up, as far as I know, put up quite a bit of money, the organizational side was heavily managed by the Grand Prix people. So the, you know, setting up a playing hall with thousands of chessboards and so on.
But they used to have this type of numbers, even in classical chess, right? Like last year, for example, or like 2 years ago when Hans...
As far as I remember, they've had less...
...store there.
They've had like 4,000 people in the past. Like they've had like 4,000 people playing this in different sections and so on. So like it was always the biggest open in the world, which made sense that why they combined their efforts. And with some caveats, I thought it was a good event, you know, overall.
How was the anti-cheating?
Zero.
Because with 4,000 people or 3,000 people or whatever, that's almost impossible to implement.
Yeah, absolutely zero.
Zero, yeah?
Mm. Yeah, there's nothing.
Yeah, that's a problem. That's a problem.
They actually did like check me once before. They had a airport metal detector. I mean, not like the sophisticated airport ones, but the, you know, the basic thingy walked through, which I never had to go through except for once they asked me before my game against, maybe it was the last round against Amin Tabatabe. If you look at the quality of that game, they really didn't have to check me. It was not necessary. But yeah, that was the one time. But of course, yeah, there's so many players, it's just impossible. Like there were times when I went off the stage and I went into the kind of the general area to play. And like after I lost to Etienne, I got kicked off and went to the general boards. And then there was people with phones, and sometimes people would ask for like a selfie during the game, things like that.
During the game?
Okay. Well, it was kind of a madhouse in some ways. I mean, it was a lot of people.
Wow.
Really a lot of people. It was, so you can't control the situation, right? That's the nature of open tournaments. That's why like cheating is just an issue that you can solve it in a top tier tournament where you have, 12 people or 10 people, whatever it is. And you can check everyone individually and they all play in a closed room and there's nobody else there, St. Louis style, right?
Yeah.
But once you have an open tournament, once you have hundreds of people, if not thousands, then there's nothing to do. You just have to trust that people don't cheat. That's about it.
Yeah, I think that was kind of, the incident with Magnus and Mihalevsky, where obviously we don't think anybody cheated, but Magnus was quite adamant about Mihalevsky not wearing his watch. We know Magnus doesn't like watches in general. He's had an incident before, but this was also, something that happened during that tournament. Like,
actually, I didn't know about this, but
you didn't know about this?
No.
Before they started playing, he asked the arbiter to take Mihalevsky's watch, and Mihalevsky was like, "Fine, of course." I mean,
okay, fair enough. I mean,
a mechanical watch.
It's better to do it before the game than complain after the game, right?
So. No, it was before the game. It was.
No, that's what I mean. It's better to do it before the game, and then, like if you ask for something before the game, okay, it's fair. If you ask for it after the game, then it becomes some kind of controversial thing. But
especially
if I'm not. Yeah, that's my point. Like, in case you lose, and then you're like, no, but to ask before the game, I think it's reasonable. I mean, nobody needs to watch their affairs.
Of course. No.
Like, okay, Etienne had his phone to take a selfie. Like, I took a selfie with Etienne before our game.
What happened to his phone? Like, what did he do?
Oh, he just gave it to the organizer there, Sven.
Okay. Okay.
Like, he's the organizer of the Bundesliga team that we play on Baden-Baden, so. They know Etienne's also on the team. They know each other. He just gave him the phone. I never took my phone to the round because I thought about it. I was like, okay, I can give my phone to maybe an arbiter or an organizer, but then what if I can't find it after the game? And I don't want to like run around this huge place where there's too many people. And so I just left it in my hotel room, which was, I thought, an easier solution.
Yeah. This open events, which attract players like yourself, they're not easy to come by because you need a lot of money. I mean, ultimately, you guys are not going to play if the first prize is $10,000 or something like that. You need a lot of money for the prize fund. You need a big sponsor. And I guess there's only a handful of those type of big sponsors.
For me, like, one of the main, which I think maybe wasn't a good idea on their part, but one of the main motivating factors was that they gave so many tour points for this event.
It was the
same as any other event, which I don't think is the right way to do it. I mean, it shouldn't have the same importance as one of the knockout closed events, but that's what they decided. So I felt like I'm risky to drop behind in the race if I don't even try to compete in this event.
Yeah,
that was super blessed. Like,
so far, so good for you. Yeah, you're Magnus is first, you're second, Hikaru third, I think, in the standing.
Right? This is third.
Because he played this tournament. Because
No, Bitsu was third before.
He was.
Third. I mean, Hikaru got second, and I think
fifth.
Yeah, second and fifth. So Vincent got first and fourth.
Ah, right.
So he's just ahead.
And you got second and third. So I guess somehow you're ahead of Vincent.
And this one, because I actually gained from this one, and he didn't.
Mm.
So I got second. I like went a tiny bit ahead of him. It's not very much, but
that makes sense. No, for sure. And do they count all of them, all of the points from all the tournaments? Like, for example, if you don't play this open tournament, you're just playing without an event in terms of points?
Yeah, you just skipped an event.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's probably not a RPU. No, that makes sense.
Why the finals event will be double points, which makes it, I mean, it'll be like 50 first place.
Yeah.
So that's it's better to win, which is also strange to me because it's like, let's say I win Paris and I win Weisenhaus. these events are exactly identical to the what the final event will be. It's not like these events are weaker. It's a, like sometimes the final is like the final four, right? And then it's the, you know, you take out, like you eliminate everything but the final four. But the final event is the same amount of players. So why, it's the same event. Why is it double points? It's not different in any way, you know? I actually don't get it. So it feels a bit arbitrary. Like if I win Paris and Weisenhaus, I should get more points than the person who got first in South Africa, which is the final location of the final event, and last in another event, right?
Yeah.
I shouldn't get the same points for first twice. But okay, that's the system. I mean, I'm not complaining. I just feel like whenever we have some system, I always find some things I don't like about it. So maybe it's maybe I can't be satisfied. But I do think it's a reasonable inconsistency to point out.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, one more question about this Grenke event. Which one do you think is more difficult to achieve? Magnus is 9 out of 9 in Grenke or in Classical, or 9 out of 9 in Croatia in Blitz?
9 out of 9 in the Rapid event.
I think it was Blitz, right?
Oh, when he made 9 out of 9 in Blitz.
Yeah. In Croatia, a couple of years ago.
It's so apples and oranges that I don't know. I think I would say in Blitz it's probably harder. Like I'm just thinking from my point of view. I mean, it's possible to make 9 out of 9 Blitz. I think I've made 8 out of 9 in one of these events in this Grand Chess Tour. And so yeah, with a tiny bit more, maybe I could have made 9 out of 9. But And we've seen like Sergei Karjakin, I think, once made 8.5 out of 9. Magnus made 9 out of 9 one day. But you kind of need like everything to go well. You have to play great, and then also circumstances have to work out. Your opponents have to like, it's just everything has to go correctly. But if you gave me the list of players that Magnus played, I think it's definitely very unlikely to do it in one try. But it's not impossible for sure. I mean, if you told me, like, I'm going to play the opponents that he played with the colors that he had, and I'm going to do this 10 times this year, I think I have a reasonable chance of one time sweeping it. I mean, like, it's very tough. I mean, he's playing a lot of, okay, Wonders is a very strong player. Vincent's very strong.
Yeah.
It's going to be really tough, but maybe 10 is not enough. I don't know, but it's possible to sweep. I mean, a few details have to work out.
But I feel it's much more likely than in normal chess, right? I mean, you don't have the you don't have the opening knowledge, right? So you can basically create that separation that you get when you're Magnus and you're playing 2700s. As early as move one, like you don't have to worry.
No, it's so much more likely in freestyle. Yeah,
yeah.
It's not like I'm taking away from the achievement. It's just I don't think it's really realistically possible. And I mean, he's going to drop draws.
Yeah, if exactly.
Yeah, in the normal setup. I mean, you're just not going to get chances in a few of the games. Like, it's not your fault. You just won't get chances.
Exactly. Exactly.
Maybe also a few of the white games, you will get chances because it's not easy to create ideas. But definitely in the games where you're playing black, like, the thing is, your ability to create chances is so difficult for anyone that people won't even try because it's too risky and doesn't make sense. It's just a losing strategy to go out of your way trying to beat, let's say, you know, a wonder with the black pieces. Mm-hmm. It can happen naturally, but if you try to push it, then you risk too much. And if it happens naturally, it's not going to happen every single game naturally, right? Sometimes it'll happen, you get chances, sometimes not.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is, in Blitz, it's just, I don't know, things have to go so well. Everything, all the time scrambles, you're playing top players. Like, you're playing the best players in the world. Like, you just don't have control of it. It happens randomly, maybe. Like, you play great, and also everything else works out. But you have no control over it.
Yeah, I feel that was much more difficult than this one. Obviously, not taking away anything from it. 9 out of 9 is absolutely insane. But against the best players in Blitz.
Well, we can't be taken away because we're discussing two of his different achievements. We can tell you we're taking away. But
yeah. We're not taking away from one of them. But yes, comparably, they're not.
I think it's a great achievement. I mean, I would be very proud of either.
Yes.
Of either of these. But like, even though I still think if you told me I could choose one or the other, I would probably still. Actually, I don't know which one I'd be more proud of. That's a hard one. Yes, because in Blitz, it kind of feels like, okay, everything just worked out. It was like just a miracle. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I feel like you kind of deserve it more because it's in your control, right? You just played well.
Yeah.
I mean, in Classical, if you're not playing well, then it's not going to happen. In Blitz, things can randomly happen a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, you can just get lucky. I mean, I was even watching the Rapid today on Greg's tour. And it does feel like a lot of stuff is just random circumstance very often. I mean, I know that it's skill, you know, like in general, it's skill. But in individual games, so much of it is just random stuff.
Yeah, let's go to the Grand Chess Tour, actually. Just started 2025. This is the 10-year anniversary, and it starts with Poland. Somewhat of a softer field than what we're going to see in the rest of the events. We have Alireza, Jan Krzysztof Duda, Loco, Levon, who is going to be a full-time player, MVL, Prague, Fedosev, and now we're getting into the wild cards. Fedosev, Arvin, Deak, Topalov, and Gavrilescu. So you get 5 wild cards. That's quite a lot. That's quite a lot. And obviously, if you look at Gavrilescu, 25-60, Topalov hasn't played in a very long time. Daniel Deak, a strong player, but still under 2,700. And then you get, you know, the up-and-coming guns, let's say, are Aravin and Fedosev. I don't know if I should call him an up-and-coming gun, but his Nexus was he's a dangerous player, yes.
He's a, you know, he can beat anyone,
yes,
under the right circumstances.
A softer field in this one.
What do you think? I'm considering that, I mean, Veselin is so out of practice.
Yeah.
He is, and also Gavrilescu is going to be fighting for his life in this tournament, objectively. He just will be. He's actually not doing... he had a decent first day. He scored 50%.
Yeah.
But
he beat Veselin. Last day is with a save, and then he made a draw against somebody.
Against Alireza, I think he was actually like close to winning this game.
That's good. That's good. That's very decent.
I mean, maybe not so close, but he was definitely significantly pressing at some point. Oh, the engine says he was like borderline winning, so that's a good first day. But of course, he will be fighting for his life. He is an underdog against every single one of the opponents. And Alireza should normally be a favorite, but I don't know if it's so easy. But he's just so good at Blitz that you usually consider, like, let's say he does normally in Rapid, maybe he doesn't win. Because in Rapid, I wouldn't say he's a favorite, but he's among the favorites. But in Blitz, he's generally kind of better than the other guys,
mm-hmm.
Not by a huge margin, but by some margin. So I don't know. It'll be interesting though. I don't think it's going to be easy. And the first day was Alireza was, he scored +1, and I think he should be incredibly satisfied with that.
I remember. I think that he was not lost, but he was already worse at some point towards the end. Then that faltered with a huge blunder. And then, as you just mentioned, against Gavrilescu, completely lost as well. So yeah, good day for Alireza.
But that's his name.
Well, he's a scrambler.
He's very good in time scrambles for sure. But the first game against Fedosev, I really do think like it was just out of his hands at multiple moments, but okay, he didn't make a draw. But it wasn't like he was choosing very often the best path towards his draw, right? He was kind of like getting a chance and then letting it go, and then, but yeah, he did keep his chances till the end to survive. But like from the opening, I mean, his position was so bad. Like, he was just a pawn down for absolutely nothing, and you know, Fedosev had all the time in the world. So just to stay in the game for so long was already an achievement.
Somewhat of a statement by Veselin Topalov just before the tournament started, and I'm not even sure exactly what he means by that, but it's starting to make the rounds around social media. He said the progress is coming from private companies surrounding, you know, everything that's happening in the chess world, the new events and whatnot, like chess.com and the Grand Chess Tour. FIDE is not doing enough. They missed the digital revolution, is a big controversial statement. Do you agree that FIDE has missed the digital revolution, and what does that even mean?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I don't know if I agree to start with. I can definitely think of things that weren't done perfectly by all different organizers. I mean, if we're talking about chess.com, you know, they're doing some things well. Some things I think could do with a lot of improvement. I'm not even like talking the anti-cheating stuff. That's not what I mean. But in terms of like a lot of their flagship events, it feels like they were changing or disappearing. And I don't know. I'm not sure that the direction that they're going with in terms of broadcasting events. Now, okay, they're kind of going along with freestyle, but that's not their project, right? So I wouldn't, you know, they're kind of taking over like the broadcast for some events, right?
Yeah.
But it's not their own project. So like when it was the chess.com projects, that was like the Champions Chess Tour or the Speed Chess Championship, which I think is a good one for them. I think that's the one that they're kind of banking on in terms of viewership these days.
Well, the Champions Chess Tour definitely decreased in number of events as well as probably viewership. So they're definitely, it doesn't seem like they're profitable or at least as profitable on that one, but the Speed Chess Championship definitely is one that they should probably.
Yeah, no, the Speed Chess Championship, okay, that's good. They have that sound. It gets good viewership. But it's, aside from like the I would call the like the Final Four the main draw, right? Before that, it's like all the quarterfinal matches and so on and so forth. But some of them get viewership, some don't. They're also over in 3 hours. It's not like a big event. People play from home. The Final Four, that's like a 2-day thing, right? So it's not some, that's maybe their flagship these days, but it's not a really like big event, right? There's also not so much money in it. It's just a kind of a fun distraction for the players, I think.
Yeah.
And the Champions Chess Tour was like the big one. It culminated in this big prize fund live final, 200 grand first prize and the best players and so on. And that kind of got merged into the Esports World Cup, which it's good that they found a partnership for that. But again, it feels like chess.com is kind of like trying to like share the tournament or give part of it away. And I don't know how much in their control it is now. Like, is the time control in their control? If we play on computers or on tablets or on phones, who knows what we'll play in when we actually get to the Esports World Cup? Is that in their control? Like, I don't know if any of it's in their control as well. So the format, I don't know if that's in their control. They might be kind of going along for the ride in some ways. And I think it was a better show in some ways when they had the live final. Although I don't know. Of course, I'm not going to speak about an event that hasn't happened yet. It might turn out to be a great event. I hope so. But I don't know if it's entirely in chess.com's control in terms of how the tournament is going to be run. And when it comes to Grand Chess Tour, I think they do a great broadcast. They have they have good events, a lot of the best players in the world. It's a format that they've kind of stuck with for a long time, and now they're adding the Final Four, which I think is a very good change. But somehow the viewership, it is lacking in some ways. And I don't know what the reason for that is. But if we're comparing with FIDE, their World Championship does get the best viewership by far of any event. And the second probably goes to the candidate.
Candidates. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe the third might actually be like the World Rapid and Blitz Championship. Or maybe not. Maybe Freestyle.
But those are also the events that, like, the viewership that you're talking about is the productions ran by chess.com usually. Like, not the productions ran by FIDE. Because you have all sorts of, like, you have Chess Base India, which is going to be do extremely well, especially in a world championship match. Like, you have the product, the match itself. But the viewership is going to go once again to chess.com, Chess Base India, etc. And it's mostly not going to go to FIDE, the FIDE streams. I guess this is somewhat what he's talking about. But still, FIDE has the product in itself. And I feel like they sort of accomplish different goals, and they're probably going for different goals as well. They have different goals, chess.com versus FIDE. Like, FIDE has the product. Chess.com obviously is trying to make it economically viable. Like, this is the only thing that they care about. I don't think profit is necessarily something that FIDE is going for 100% compared to, you know, Freestyle Chess, chess.com. Freestyle Chess obviously is trying to make it a business, you know, is trying to make it an economically viable business. Like, they just have different goals altogether, the organizations. It's very unfair to compare them to each other. And we're also, as the whole scene, the chess scene, we're at an interesting intersection, right? Previously, let's say 10, 15 years ago, it was, we sort of, everybody agreed to the fact that most big money events are going to be sponsored by patrons, like individual patrons that are not necessarily looking to make a profit. Nowadays, you have all of these companies that are trying to turn chess into an economically viable product. So I feel the comparison and a bit of the, you know, attack on FIDE is unwarranted. I just feel like they're achieving different, and they're looking for different goals.
Yeah, I don't know about FIDE. Like, the thing is, okay, when it comes to chess.com, it's a company, they're trying to make money.
Of course.
That's pretty clear.
Profit, yeah.
When it comes to Freestyle, it is kind of a startup, as you said, and their ultimate goal is probably to make money. And for Magnus in Freestyle, because he is kind of a partner, right? And it is very much his project as well. I think he just wants to play this form of chess and make money doing it, which he's achieving. And if they actually start to make serious profit at some point, remains to be seen. I hope so. That would prove that, yeah, that their concept works. But I mean, it works for the players, obviously, but that's simple. That's just like, you give money to the players, it works, right? In terms of actually continuing to run a tournament without it being a huge money sink is another question that will be shown one way or the other in the next few years. FIDE is like mostly run by politicians, whether chess politicians or just politicians. And their motives, I don't know entirely. Could be money, could be some other reasons. But I do feel like you can't really, I mean, you can dislike FIDE all you want, but they do have the product that, for whatever reason, draws the most attention and has done so for a very long time. So, and that's why it's very sensible that they were really fighting. Maybe I don't agree exactly with how they were fighting for their world championship, but that they were doing it was very reasonable. The fact that, you know, they were doing it by kind of negotiating, if you want to call it that, directly with players. We've already talked about that, right? I don't think it was the best approach.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very valuable product to them. The World Championship, people watch it, people care about it, the players care about it. It has legitimacy that usurps any other event by far. Other events are legitimate and people care about them, players care about them, but it's not the World Championship, right? It's not exactly the same. So now, in terms of progress, FIDE has not, I mean, in that point of view, because his exact quote was that, you know, FIDE is not making enough progress, right? Yeah, FIDE hasn't really made progress. I mean, they've had the same, it's a strategy that works. They have the World Championship and their events leading up to World Championship. And I know that I'll get called out if I don't say that they do, you know, all the youth events and so on, and the Olympiad, which is true. But they have the World Championship. That's the main thing. And have they changed it? No, not really. I guess they added two games, or they removed two games every now and then. They changed the candidates from matches to tournaments. The last time they did that was, I guess, 2013. But yeah, it hasn't really changed. It's remained the same. And maybe it doesn't have to change. Maybe it's what people want.
Yeah.
But it didn't keep Magnus. Some would argue that they should have changed to keep Magnus. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. They decided not to. I, in their position, would have probably also decided not to change the format at the whim of a single player.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably was the right decision, but it's very debatable. But yeah, I guess Vesselin would have to maybe elaborate a bit more to fully get his views on it, because it sort of makes sense, but it's maybe, it's hard to know exactly, you know, where he's going with it. Like, what should they do differently? And what are others doing better? And I would also be curious, like, what, for me, the Grand Chess Tour delivers a good product. Why doesn't it get the viewership that feels commensurate with that product that they're giving?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And me being part of, you know, the broadcast, for the most part, I will be doing some commentary this year for the Grand Chess Tour as well. I've been doing it for many, many years. Obviously, this is something that I really want to see improve. I want to see the viewership improve. But at the same time, the question is this what the Grand Chess Tour is looking for? I'm sure everybody wants to see the bigger number, but is this primarily what they're going for? And if it's not, then that's, you know, that's fine. And that's their decision. Now, moving along with a different topic, just kind of ease into the end of this podcast. There were some rumors about a USA versus India match. Do you know anything? Can you give any details on that one? I know Hikaru has tweeted about it. There are some rumors swirling around.
What are the rumors?
USA versus India match. Top two players from each country, women's boards, YouTube legends, and under 15 prodigies. All rapid, all decisive. I don't even know what all decisive means.
Where is this?
This is a tweet by Checkmate SV. Which was retweeted by Hikaru. And chess.com. I think chess.com also retweeted it. So definitely.
Yeah, I see a tweet. Yeah. So I do know.
You do know. You have the inside info. Okay. Give us the scoop.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that I can say anything for the moment. I don't know what I can say exactly. I think that basically, like, probably it will all be announced very soon. But personally, I'm not sure what I can say, although...
But you're played.
I don't even know if I can say that. Hikaru did retweet it. I guess that's something.
Well, Hikaru is definitely playing. He says USA versus India. Stay tuned for details. He would never retweet something that he's not playing in.
Well, I mean, okay, basically, so it says this is the tweet. Top two players for each country, which in the United States would be Hikaru and myself, and in India would be Gukesh and Arjun.
I think so.
And yes. Then women's board, which if we're going for the number one in India and the US would be Carissa
and Conero
and Harika or
Conero Humpy.
Oh, of course, Humpy. Yeah,
Humpy.
But of course, it doesn't say like number one women's board. It just says women's board. YouTube legends.
What does that mean? What's YouTube legends?
Well, it's probably just YouTubers, right? I mean,
but who?
Well, it's probably chess YouTubers.
So YouTube legend. Stop, like, who's going to be the YouTube legend from the USA? You don't have to tell me who's going to be, but who do you think would be?
The thing, right? Like, I know who it's going to be, so I can't tell you.
So you know who's gonna. Okay. All right. We're not going to give any debuts.
I got it. Tell you who I think it's going to be.
Interesting. Okay. What does all rapid, all decisive mean? What does that mean?
Well, I don't know if I can say that either. But I guess rapid is pretty clear that it's rapid.
Yes. Interesting. Okay.
And underperforming prodigies, I don't know. Actually, I don't remember.
I mean, under 15 prodigies, and by the way, I don't know anything. So this is who I would go for right now. It would be Andy Woodward. If I would
be under 15,
I believe.
I think so, no?
Really? If I would be a betting man, I would say it's probably going to be Andy Woodward from the US, but...
Oh, yeah, he is under 15.
Again, I don't know all the deals.
I realize.
This is who I would go for. And then for India, I don't actually know the under 15s in India. So I cannot...
They must have... Let me check the like junior list.
I cannot give you a big guess on that one. And I don't know the deals. Like, you obviously know them. I don't know the deals.
I don't remember the junior one, but I think I kind of should know who it is. But okay, it's going to be some under 15 now.
When is that happening?
Yeah, I just thought I could say that.
Say that? Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be announced very soon.
Okay. You're leaving us in a cloud. In
yeah, I haven't really said much. But okay, the tweet is hinting at an event. It on their Twitter says reinventing competitive chess. And I didn't really.
Hey, YouTube legends, Gotham Chess. This is who I think is going to be. Gotham Chess. It has to be Gotham Chess from, and Gotham against Cigar. This is my pick. I think this is going to be it. Gotham Chess against Cigar Shaw. They're both IMs. Makes the most sense to me.
It's a very reasonable analysis.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. All right. I think
it should be a fun event. I think basically the kind of announcement stuff will roll out pretty soon. It already has started to. I guess I'll probably also be kind of part of the announcement rollout in some way. And yeah, should be fun.
Cool. All right. I think that sums it all up. Sums up everything that's new in the chess world. And yeah, we'll leave it at that. Any big plans before Romania?
No big plans, you know, just... usual.
Yeah, it's getting late in Spain. I see it getting dark already.
Yeah, it's the sun has started to set. It's still a bit bright. I mean, it's actually 9 o'clock. It really gets dark late here.
Yeah.
It's still like bright out, just, you know, starting to dim. Probably will be relatively dark within an hour.
Go get some dinner. I'll go get some lunch, and we'll catch up later. Cheers, guys. Don't forget, like, subscribe, all the good stuff. Check out the merch as well. We do have merch. We do have new items. I think you guys would definitely enjoy them. But the big one is spread the word. Tell tell everybody where you're listening to your chess podcast. And yeah, we'll take it from there. Cheers, guys. See you in the next one.